Hey everyone, welcome to Locked On Lakers for Friday. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky. Andy, how attached are people to the 2020 championship season for the Lakers? It's the only good one they've had, really, in the last nine. But what does it mean to fans? One of the questions we're asking next on Locked On Lakers.
You are Locked On Lakers. Your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Thanks to everybody for making Locked On Lakers your first listen of every day, Monday through Friday, sometimes on weekends. No matter how you get your podcasts, where you get your podcasts, we always have this thing up and ready for you. Locked On Lakers on YouTube, Andy, allows people to get it even faster and get the eye candy that is us. We'll get to this question of the 2020 championship and how attached people are to it. Really fascinating and extensive response to a question that you asked on Twitter on Thursday. We're going to try to get to a little bit of Russell Westbrook, a really great comment that we got on the Locked On Lakers YouTube page. It's kind of a jumping off point for a lot of things we're going to talk about today.
Yep.
But let's start, Andy, here. Jovan Buha at The Athletic, somebody we were hoping to get on the show reasonably soon, has his grades out for the Lakers for the 2021-2022 season. Not surprisingly, the team grade pretty low and all that. It was a bad year. There were a couple of things that stuck out to me in terms of the grades that he assigned people. Was there anything that kind of jumped out to you? You know, it was an A for LeBron. I think Reeves got an A. Russ got a D. What kind of stuck out to you as you went through this?
That Anthony Davis got a B minus, and that it is a reminder on a bunch of different levels what it means for Anthony Davis not to be an A. Mm-hmm. And I mean, like, you can,
it's a great point.
You know, you can carp about the grade, whatever you want, whether you think it's a B, B plus, B minus, C, whatever.
Doesn't matter.
He did not have an A. By no reasonable measurement would you say that Anthony Davis's season was an A, mm-hmm. whether by his own standards or by the standards of what the Lakers needed from him. And it is, again, a reminder of what it means for him to not be playing at this level. That was not the only reason things went sideways this season, but you need him back to that level if you want things to get back on path in any meaningful way.
Right. And it's interesting because, like, you know, it wasn't a B minus. I mean, people, you know, we'll tweet it out and people are certainly encouraged to go, read it and all that. But it wasn't a B minus because, you know, he was hurt, but otherwise, you know, performed really well. No, I mean, LeBron missed a bunch of games and was still graded high, and I would have given him a high grade myself too. Like, AD didn't play well by that standard when he was on the floor. He wasn't terrible, but it's a reminder, like you say, the way they set this team up, as much as the goal was to make it easier on LeBron, to make it easier on AD, they set themselves up in a position where they needed both of those guys to be better. And that in and of itself was a terrible idea. And AD didn't meet the standard. So they were 0-for-2 in that regard. To me, what stuck out is, if you look at it, you know, LeBron got an A, AD got a B minus. The only other players who get really high grades, one is Malik Monk, who Jovan, I think, gave an A-, and, you know, again, quibble about a little bit of the details, but it's pretty clear Malik was a highlight of this season and played well. Carmelo Anthony got a B+. I might have knocked him down a little lower than that. I think his second half was sort of low-key, not that great. All the rest of the guys that they have there that they expected to play, they were all C's. D's. Trevor Ariza wasn't around at the end, didn't get a grade. So I mean, he probably would have been like a D or an F. Like, they missed on almost everything they did. Whether you're talking about Ellington, Bazemore, Ariza, you know, bringing in Avery Bradley, DJ, Dwight, like, none of this stuff really worked. The only guys that graded out relatively well in Jovan's feature here were the dudes who weren't expected to play. Austin Reeves,
Stanley Johnson, Wenyen Gabriel, guys weren't even on the team. It's just another reminder of how badly this team was put together this year and how badly they missed. And hopefully it becomes a blueprint for what not to do next season.
It's just I say that because they're going to have essentially the same toolbox available to them that they had last offseason, I guess, without the option of making a incredibly aggressive and unnecessary trade for a fading superstar. Hopefully they use their one-year deals, their minimum deals, all that stuff in a different way, because the approach that they had, which was very veteran forward, age forward, and all that, just didn't work. And they need to try something different because this was bad. Okay, so Andy, that bleak rundown of the Lakers roster this year gets into a great comment that we got from a viewer named Socrates Thalassos on YouTube, on the Locked On Lakers YouTube channel. Well, we're going to take Socrates' comment in parts and address them as we go along, because what we found, Andy, is they really do prompt a lot of a jumping off points here. So I'll start here. Lakers' future looks very bleak. Aging LBJ, always damaged, aggression deficient. Two ways of saying Anthony Davis, AD. No draft picks, expecting to trade 20. What?
I said, damn.
Always damaged. Always. I came up with Data Davis. I thought nicer, but always damaged is accurate, more accurate than I would like it to be. No draft picks, expect them to trade 27 and 29 to help with next year to get off Russ. A passive aggressive drama fuels the next 3 years of LBJ, since I think he probably will sign the extension because he wants to stay in LA. Not because he wants to stay with the Lakers. Pause. You had some thoughts about that concept of LeBron staying, but not necessarily because he wants to stay with the Lakers. He wants to be a Laker, motivated by winning titles with the Lakers. I'm not saying, again, that's true, but this is a perspective outcome here that Socrates is pointing out.
Well, yeah, I mean, there, like we said, there are a few points in Socrates' comments that we're going to end up breaking down. But that first part of just how much does it matter why LeBron stays? Like, is he staying mainly because LA, his family's here, creature comforts, outside businesses, not wanting to start over again? You know, not that he thinks the organization can't win at all moving forward, but he's probably not fully convinced they can either. But either way, basketball itself is the fourth or maybe fifth, but certainly not first and foremost reason that he is committing the rest of his career to this organization. Like, can you have a franchise face who represents that? And one of the things I thought was interesting about it is, in certain respects, it reminded me of what the Lakers had with Kobe post-Achilles when they gave him that $47 million extension before he'd even finished rehabbing, much less was on the court again. This was mid-season, and this was with the really real chance that Kobe was never going to be the same again, and unfortunately, that was the case, and that there would be reasons that Kobe would stay, you know, as much cosmetically, you know, what it means for his legend, the money, you know, being a lifer, all that stuff, than the actual basketball. The difference being Kobe's Kobe, LeBron is not Kobe. And also, you did not have to give up assets to keep Kobe. You just had to give up money to keep Kobe. And look, Kobe.
Well, they don't have to give up assets to keep LeBron either. But I think your
the
point
expectation
there
is that you will.
But the fact that Kobe, the LeBron, doesn't have the sort of the institutional loyalty in the fan base that Kobe had is really important. I got a couple other questions I want to ask you about this LeBron motivation thing. We'll do that next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Truebill. Do you know why free trials renew without your consent? Well, it's a business scam out to get you. Don't let greedy corporations, those fat cats, those suits, those just despicable people pocket your money. Download Truebill, power to the people, to take control of your subscriptions. Truebill is the new app that helps you identify and stop paying for subscriptions you don't want, need, or you just forgot about. On average, people save up to $720 a year with Truebill. Companies make subscriptions hard to cancel intentionally. They don't want you to go through the rigmarole of actually getting rid of the subscription you don't want. But Truebill makes it simple. Just link your accounts and Truebill will cancel your unwanted subscriptions in one tap. Truebill's had over 2 million users and they have helped them save over $100 million collectively. So don't fall for subscription scams. Start canceling today at Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. Go right now, Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. It could save you thousands a year. Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA.
Andy, you know where there are not fat cats that you describe, like in that last read, over at Built Bar. Over at Built Bar, you got a
better not be.
They got skinny cats and yoked cats because they're eating Built Bars over there. Like, you know what they're eating? The Puffs. Have you tried the Puffs? If you haven't, you're missing out on one of the best Built Bars ever. They are the first protein fused in marshmallow, fluffy, marshmallowy, not just a protein bar. They're a treat and they're covered in 100% real chocolate. Puffs are a fan favorite with some incredible flavors like cinnamony churro and coconut marshmallow and banana cream pie. And they're all really good. And they're all covered in 100% chocolate, including the Puffs, and they're low calorie, again, skinny cats, high protein, yoked cats. And you replace all your candy bars with these. They're better for you and they taste just as good. So go to built.com and you scroll down to the macros chart. You'll be blown away by all the things you see. 4 grams of sugar, 4 net carbs, those are really low numbers. 17 grams of protein, that's a big high number where you want to see one of those. I would encourage you, and the skinny yoked cats over at Built would also encourage you to go to built.com and use the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your order. Again, the promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at built.com. It's an interesting question, Andy, as to what like the motivation is for LeBron, because like you say, he's not going to have the institutional loyalty that Kobe has. He will never have the institutional loyalty. And I don't think he ever expected to get it. I think he'll always be appreciated for the title and hopefully there'll be more good stuff in the future. I do disagree with you, the idea that you're expected to give up assets. You know, there's an expected price with LeBron that there wasn't with Kobe, because the expectation always is too with Kobe, and the Lakers got themselves into trouble with this. Yep. We have to go try to win. We have to try to contend.
They didn't give up assets after Kobe's Achilles tear.
They went and tried. They made free agent signings. They did things in ways that you wouldn't. A team with more realistic expectations that wasn't stupidly trying to win a title.
Right, but they didn't give up anything to do it. They just ran the organization poorly.
I wonder how much it matters, because what Socrates is getting at is the idea that LeBron really doesn't want to play here. He wants to make movies. He just wants his family to be comfortable. He's not invested in it. If he plays hard, which he will, if he is committed on the court to trying to win and trying to play at the highest level, if he really just wants to say because he's comfortable here, I don't think it matters. That part of it doesn't matter to me, as long as the on-court product and the on-court commitment doesn't really wane.
I think it matters if your franchise face doesn't truly believe that you can win a championship. I think that matters. I mean, look, we could see it this year with LeBron around the trade deadline. It was obvious he didn't believe what was going on, with good reason, and that grew disruptive. And I think there's a trickle-down effect from it.
But I will say, I agree with you there. But I am wondering that in this sort of future, it depends really a lot on we talked about this for Thursday's show. Like, what do the Lakers think they're going to be this year? What kind of team? We'll start with just the year that's in front of us, where LeBron is here. Or it could be the next 2 years, what they have in front of them. If they go through the pageantry of we're a title team, we think we're one of the elite teams in the league, and they sort of bring everybody out to do the dog and pony show, then I think it could matter more, because it changes. If, as Dan Wojcicki talked about, they recalibrate to be like, you know what, we got some work to do to get back to the top. We're going to make the playoffs this year. We're going to be a solid team. And by the end of the year, we are going to try to put ourselves in a position to where we think, you know, we can go and contend. Then I think, you know, it changes the calculus of what LeBron has to go out there and pretend to do as the face of the franchise. everybody needs to buy into what they think they can do. So LeBron doesn't have to pretend that the team is a championship caliber team right away, that they're going into the season with this as the, you know, championship or bust kind of thing, because this is what we're built for. And the organization doesn't have to do that either. That means they all have to be on the same page on, hey, LeBron, we might not be able to win you a title this year. LeBron has to be able to say, okay, put together the most competitive team you possibly can. I'm comfortable here. I want to stay. It involves maybe a level of communication between front office and star that I don't know if they have.
Well, it's also a level of communication between franchise and fan base that's pretty nuanced, and I think not necessarily that easy to sell.
I don't know about that either. I actually think,
from their perspective, I think that is a difficult
I think they're wrong. Rob Pelinka and Jeannie Buss and whatever came out, I'm not talking about tanking next season.
They don't have a pick. There's no point to tanking.
No, well, there really isn't. That's actually one of my most interesting features about the rebuild and how this would have to go, is their draft status and where the picks would come from. If they said to people, we don't know, without risking the future of the franchise, like in really irresponsible ways, this is the team we're going to put together. We're going to do a better job this year. We're going to get LeBron more help. We're going to hope these guys, you know, try to keep them healthy, whatever. And we're going to be a competitive team, and we're going to be a playoff team. And we hope by the end of the year, this team will be able to contend. I actually think that they can sell that. I actually think that is a saleable vision and a saleable pitch, because it's honest. It tells people we're doing it this way because we don't want to do something stupid that's going to keep our team in a hole for a decade. And I'm not trying to be dramatic here. If they do this really wrong, you could be looking at a 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years of unpleasant results.
No argument. I just think they're going to
I think fans would accept that more than they would accept pretending that some version of this year going into next year is championship, you know, caliber. Let's do this. Spending 2 picks to get rid of Russ for John Wall, you know, or something, you know, is if they shuffle the deck chairs on the Titanic, people are not going to be any happier with that.
I don't disagree with you there. I think the problem with what you're putting out there, which is not necessarily unreasonable, but it is definitely nuanced, is they're going to picture the headline being Rob Pelinka says Lakers not ready to contend. And they're not going to like that. I think that's ultimately the concern they're going to have, because that is actually what they're saying. And they're not going to like that.
I thought they don't concern themselves with headlines, Andy. And
no, they don't. No, well, that's not an unsourced report. That's Rob Pelinka being quoted.
No, but like they've said that before. We're not worried about the headlines. We're not worried about what people are saying about us,
right,
and blah, blah, blah.
But we know they're lying. Yes. We know that they do. And again, I don't think with this organization's ethos, and again, the idea that you have LeBron James, you know that the guy is turning 39, he's going to be in his 20th season next year. There is only so much longer you can do this. You can question just the logic of what's the point of doing this if you're not damn sure you can contend.
Right, if LeBron is dead set on winning a title next year,
he should ask for a trade.
And he absolutely would.
Right.
If he is dead set on winning a title next year, then he should go find a different place to play. Mm-hmm. Because the odds of the Lakers are a mile away from the best teams in the league. Strange stuff happens. Look at Phoenix. Devin Booker is suddenly injured. And I still think they get out of the series with the Pelicans. But, you know, if you have to face Golden State without Devin Booker, it's a different deal.
And, you
absolutely. Or even a Dallas team, if Luka comes back, whatever it is. The Lakers are a mile away from that. And so LeBron knows that. He's not an idiot. Sure. And so if he feels like he wants to win a title next year, he would ask.
Right. But it does, though, take you back full circle to Socrates' original question, which is just the idea of LeBron deciding that he is okay with the twilight of his career, the last of his productive years being spent in a situation where he knows there is a very reasonable chance that he will not win a championship, you know, that he may not get past one or two rounds in the playoffs. And if somebody of LeBron's stature is okay with that, I can understand where a fan would question his overall commitment to the franchise. I don't think it is unreasonable to question that. It doesn't make him a bad person.
I think he's got to be committed to whatever the mission of the franchise is. And what we can, it's an interesting conversation. We can carry it on, you know, throughout the, is if LeBron and the franchise are on, it doesn't mean you're not trying to win. It doesn't mean you're not trying to be as good as you possibly can. And if LeBron is putting out all the effort, you know, if he's skipping games for movie premieres, we've got a problem.
No, but it speaks to the idea of LeBron ultimately being willing to settle for a likely ceiling and what that means about him if he's willing to have the rest of his career.
Actually, you could argue it means that he's more committed to the franchise than he is to, that he's committed to seeing the Lakers through to the next stage, that he's committed to staying in LA and doing the best he can.
Or that he's committed to his zip code. Or that he's committed to a zip.
Or as opposed to ditching the team as soon as it looks like he can't get exactly what he wants.
Sure. You know, again, I didn't say any of this makes LeBron a bad person or Machiavellian.
No, but there's an implication that he's not, you know, that in terms of the, you know, he wouldn't be going out and trying or caring.
No, I didn't say,
caring about winning.
I never said that he wouldn't be trying. I've never said that. I don't think that
he wouldn't be able to be the face of a franchise if he understands that we might not be able to win a title this year. Then nobody can be the face of the franchise.
For the face of this particular franchise, when you're LeBron, I mean, just look, dude, this is the world that the Lakers live in and that the Lakers have always sold. I'm not saying that if LeBron says yes to this for his future, that there's anything wrong with LeBron. I'm saying I understand what Socrates is wondering about.
All right, let's probe a little bit more into Socrates' note. He has some things to say that I sensed a little bit of cynicism about the bubble title in 2020. We'll do that next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline.net, your number one source for all your betting stats and sports info. Find all the latest sports development, league reviews, news, including the NBA playoffs, which... awesome first round so far. Like this is really fun, I imagine, to be betting on, because it is fun just to watch. So you want to put a little bit of action on that, make it even more interesting. Plus, Major League Baseball going on right now. If you're still a little bit unsure about where the season could take you, go to betonline.net. Their MLB previews are really helpful for both the AL and NL. I'm sure a lot of you people listening right now, you're Dodgers fans, a lot of confidence in the Dodgers as a mechanism for your betting. Bet online, your continued source for all your sporting wagering information, from live betting to playoffs, esports, and more. So head to the website today, use your mobile device, learn more about the trends in action. Bet online, where the games start.
Okay, so Socrates continues in this note, Andy, that he left us this comment.
He's like the silent third co-host of this show.
He is. He's not silent today, our man.
No,
Socrates.
He is not.
So he says, after the a couple comments about the roster and how empty the cupboard is, maybe a couple of the young guys pan out and are fun to watch, but maybe not. Next title, maybe 2035 if they're lucky. More likely 2040. Oof. But hey, a bubble championship in 2020. Or blow it up, trade AD and LBJ for as much as you can get, and let Russ play out his contract without spending assets to get rid of him, and jumpstart the whole process. With any luck, in 3 to 5 years, you're a contender again. We're going to save that last part about the rebuild for another time. And I want to focus on this part.
Congratulations, Socrates. You're part of two shows now.
No, you're not going to be part of two shows. You're right. Next title, maybe 2035 if they're lucky, more likely 2040. But hey, a bubble championship in 2020. Socrates does not sound like a guy who really necessarily thinks that the bubble title was worth it, or the bubble title maybe doesn't live up to the other ones. I apologize, Socrates, if I'm putting words in your mouth, but you asked a question on Twitter kind of to this point, and the responses were awesome.
Yeah, it really got me thinking just about the idea, because I have been sensing some of this anyway in terms of Laker fans having a detachment increasingly to that championship and just feeling less connected to it. So I put out on Twitter, just question, at Cam Brothers, to Laker fans. How do you feel about the 2020 championship? Not asking in a quote asterisk sense, it's a worthy title, full stop, but in terms of emotional connection, do you feel attached to it like the ones in the 80s and the 2000s? Big reaction. I mean, this got a lot of reaction really quickly and very, very appreciative of that because it was pretty fascinating. And it was pretty split, like pretty 50-50 in terms of fans who not just feel connected to it, but feel pretty strongly connected, and fans who feel like I had been kind of suspecting pretty detached to it. The people mm-hmm. that feel attached to it, the number one reason was the idea of Kobe being honored in the wake of his death. And, you know, they won that championship in his name. Literally, you know, there was the game winner Anthony Davis hit against Denver and calling Kobe. You know, the organization, the fan base, there was a real catharsis from this, as at Quest for 18 put it. It's one of the best championships personally for me because of the Kobe connection, the Mamba jerseys, the score being 24-8 in the first round versus Portland. So many subtle things that led to the banner to the year Kobe passed. Also love the camaraderie of that team. Love it. As our friend LZ Granderson put it on Twitter, it's the chip for Kobe. Also got a lot of people saying that it was a respite from the pandemic, one of the worst overall years in modern history. You know,
wasn't sport, good.
Sports to, I have some notes for the pandemic. sports to whatever degree they could were like a release and a distraction. That championship tied the Lakers and the Celtics for titles. As we said before, there is no asterisk. That title was hard.
It's real. It was hard. It's really hard.
As a standalone team, that was a really, really mm-hmm. likable crew. Before we get to the cons.
I think, you know, when you look at that, I mean, I get it. I get the reasons people would think that way. And I get the reasons people would feel detached from it. I get the reasons they feel like, and I assume that's, you know, in my reading of that, that's a lot of what that was. It's like, it was far away. They never saw the team. They never experienced a parade. There wasn't any opportunity. It's not that as a Lakers fan, you don't think it counts. It's just that you didn't have those normal touch points where you get the opportunity to connect with it. Even to the point of, I can't go to the game, but I can go to the sports bar and watch right. it with all my buddies. I can do it. And so it was just
a bunch of us were over at some guy's house and we were all watching yes. it together, like 30 deep in somebody's man cave. We
right.
We
I went that. To my favorite bar with all my friends. Like, you know, I there's no way I could pay. I couldn't even pay to get into the upper deck, but I watched it with my buddies. Like, none of that was there. And so I understand a certain attachment.
There was also too, this was something that came up a lot in people's responses in terms of what's led them to feeling detached to that team. Mm-hmm. It was, as I mentioned before, a likable team that one season, but it was really, really mercenary in terms of the setup with the stars. You know, LeBron was not an original Laker. Anthony Davis was not an original Laker. And they had to trade a lot or move a lot of guys just to get those two in the house. Since then, it has been so dismantled, it's basically unrecognizable now. Like, you have LeBron and AD, who has been an absent star in a lot of ways since winning that championship. And that's basically it, because THT was not a factor in that title run. And Dwight, even if he's back next season, he's going to be a bit player. He was in and out of the rotation.
And he left. He wasn't here the next year.
And, you know, there feels like, for a lot of fans, them talking to me, and this is something that I relate to because I am somebody that mm-hmm. gets sappy and sentimental about the homegrown guys. Like I've said before,
for
I've
sure.
always
no question.
Wanted to see the Earth 2 version of what would happen with the Lakers if they had kept the majority of Ingram, Randall, Lonzo, Kuzma, Hart,
whatever they Nance. Whatever combination right. they could pay for, I surrounded would, by whatever.
Right. I would love to see what that looked like. Mm-hmm. Also, too, Brian, this separate note got me thinking about just the bar for Laker legends and like what it takes to be a Laker legend. Shaq's 8 seasons, Brian, as a Laker, include a three-peat, 3 finals MVPs, 4 finals appearances, a league MVP, consensus most dominant player of his era, and as a Laker, he is no higher than 5th Mung gloats because he's not going to pass Kobe, Magic, West, or Kareem. That's insane.
That's pretty impressive. Yeah, that's nuts. But to your point, like, I think that mercenary aspect is interesting. That'll give you my reason for being sort of the reason I don't look at the 2020 title as a sort of comforting point of like, hey, but this happened, and like, you know, there's potential for good here. But you know, that mercenary aspect is interesting because like when you think about your favorite teams and your title teams, it's not just the stars. I mean, obviously it's Kobe, it's Powell, it's Magic, it's Kareem, whatever. People gravitate to the role guys. They gravitate to Robert Horry, to Brian Shaw, to Derek Fisher, to, you know, Kurt Rambis, and a little less now, but more then, and all that. Yeah. And obviously when those guys disappear as fast as they did from that roster, you can't do that. But let me tell you my reason for why I look at 2020 and I don't go like, yeah, but they won a title 2 years ago. You can get back. My problem with the 2020 title is that the context, when you try to think about how do we reshape what the Lakers are and can get them back to that place, the context of that title, God willing, can never be repeated. The main concern that we have right now about Anthony Davis and LeBron James, they can't stay healthy. They won't be on the court. They will not be available when you need them to go through a playoff run. How did they get them ready to go through a playoff run? They took a break for 2.5 months, whatever it was. You can't do that again. And so while you can take some lessons about the roster construction and how they put that together, you may not be able to repeat it because of the way that they've hamstrung themselves. The fundamental thing about health and that guarantee of getting LeBron and AD into the playoffs feeling good and feeling healthy cannot be repeated again. And so that to me is what makes me look at that year and go, it was great. It was awesome. It was unusual. It was something people will study. It's also kind of irrelevant for where the Lakers need to go in ways that other title seasons aren't. That's my takeaway from it.
You know, it's funny too, like the idea of how much has been dismantled since that championship, and the dismantling has, you know, led to negative places, you know, where we are now. That championship roster has been increasingly, and for a lot of fans, maddeningly, you know, dismantled. Mm-hmm. And there's two things about that before we go that I just wanted to read comments on Twitter. First, from Tommy Liebacker, treating Vogel the way they did tells me the Lakers don't even take the championship seriously, which
that's a good, I was like, oof, 4 stars for that one.
I was like, I got nothing. There was also though a comment from Eraserface that I thought summarized this really nicely. The connection to the 2020 title is on par with all the others. Satisfaction level though is disappointing. It was catharsis for an incredibly difficult year, Kobe, world events, etc. But without a parade and the quick regression and roster turnover, it stings to think about what could have been. Although that was actually a really good way of summarizing just how singularly unusual that championship is, you know, just in NBA history, but I think also for Laker fans.
So Socrates, congratulations. As Andy mentioned, you will be part of another show going forward because your comment about Russell Westbrook brings up something that I think I've touched on, but maybe I don't think we've gotten to it in a lot of detail. Like, what would a rebuild, a proper rebuild, look like for the Lakers? And it would be bizarre in so many ways that I'm not totally sure people have thought about. So we'll get to that maybe for Monday show at some point next week. We're trying to obviously line up some guests so that has some influence on what we talk about and when. Locked On Lakers on YouTube. Make sure you check that out. And we appreciate all the support, and we'll see everybody on Monday.